And welcome back to another episode of the Prepping for Everything podcast with me, your host, Emily. I can't believe that we are into March, and how good does it feel? This is my favourite time of the year when we start getting into spring. Everything just seems so much brighter. Everything is growing again. It's getting more luscious. The bees are out of their hives in search for food. I didn't think that we were going to see them this early in the year because, I mean, from now we can still get frost. It just seems like it's too early, but they know what they're doing. They know themselves better than I do. And I'm just so looking forward to this year. I said to myself that I wasn't going to grow any food this year because I didn't want to put pressure on myself. Just with moving and renovating and baby, and there's a lot happening, but I think with growing food for the past few years, it just feels weird not to now. I love the feeling of putting in so much work to something, of looking after these seedlings and watching them sprout, and then literally nurturing them for months, and you reap the rewards on the other end. How amazing is the feeling of growing your own food, being able to pull it from the ground and put it on your plate, and you did that. You get to enjoy that on the other end. It's a wonderful feeling. So that's what I'm thinking about. I'm already behind. This time last year, I think I started my onions indoors in January, right at the end of January. So we're now into March and I've done nothing. So I've really got to get my finger out if we're going to do that now. If you're listening to this and you're in the same boat as me and you want to grow something but you haven't started yet, let's get planning because the year is going to fly in before we know it, considering how quickly the past few months have gone. But anyway, we're not here to talk about gardening today. I left you all on a bit of a cliffhanger last week. I told you after the Bug Out Bag episode that your homework was to go away and prepare a family emergency plan, a family disaster plan, just a contingency plan. But then I gave you no idea of how to do that. So I'm sorry, and I'm here to rectify it today. We are going to completely cover everything that you should be discussing with your family so that everybody knows what they're doing in an event of an emergency. I find that quite often this can be a sticky subject because people think that when they have kids, you want to keep your kids sheltered, right? You don't want to make them fearful of the world. You want to take on everything, all of that burden, all of that planning by yourself. But I think there's a way of doing things without making your kids fearful. It's involving them. It's letting them problem solve. It's building their critical thinking. It's empowering them so that if there was an emergency, they kind of know how to handle it. We don't need to approach it from a place of fear. We don't need to keep them up at night worrying, but I think touching on certain things with your kids is important. And obviously it's all age appropriate, it's kid appropriate. You know your child better than anyone else, and you're going to know how to approach any situation like this better than what I can tell you. But I think back to my own childhood and how this was applied to us. And I had great parents. I'm not going to lie. I have great parents. I grew up with them just really focusing on trying to instill as much common sense into us as they possibly could. And even now, like, I have conversations with my dad and he's constantly trying to teach us things. I'll go on a walk with him. And just recently he said, you know, why is this path? Why does it rise in the middle and fall at the sides? And I'm like, Dad, I'm not five. It's obviously so that the water has somewhere to drain. I'm 27 years old and he's still doing it. But when I think back to being younger, it really, really helped us just establish how to figure things out. It empowered us. It showed us that we could work things out. We were part of problem solving. We were part of the family preparedness. And even my mum, she was actually in the fire brigade, which was a really big thing in the 90s. You know, there wasn't very many women in the Highlands of Scotland anyway that were in the position that she was in. So it was a cool way to grow up to be able to see her doing that. And she would even help empower us in the sense of fire drills. You know, it was never talked about in a fearful, scary way. I would never lie awake as a child thinking about there being a house fire and how would I escape. But it was just subtly dropped in, subtly mentioned, you know, if this happened, what would you do? How would you solve that? If the front door exit was blocked, how would you get out if there was a fire? And it'd be like, okay. So I'd probably try and get out the window. I mean, that was fine for us. We lived in a bungalow, but I think just involving your kids in these situations is massive. And this is only one example, right? This is such a tiny part of a family preparedness plan, but I think it gives you a look into how you can involve your kids in a non-fearful way. And my hope for this episode is to cover everything involved. I want you to go away and create your own. And if you think it's going to be helpful, get a notebook and pen, and you can just start doing it yourself to then bring to your family tonight at the dinner table. It doesn't need to be a big deal. It can be as casual or as serious as you want it to be. But at the end of the day, it's probably going to be really useful if you all understand what is going to happen in the event of an emergency. You're not thinking, oh my goodness, I've done all this planning, but my downfall is I haven't shared it with anyone. I think it's really important that we're all on board and we all know what's happening. A preparedness plan is pretty self-explanatory, right? Or a disaster plan. It's basically just the steps that you should take as a family to be ready for any disaster. And the first thing I'm going to ask you to do, because yours is going to be different from mine, is to identify your hazards. Find out what could happen to you. What sort of natural disasters are in your area? If there's anything that can be human caused or technological disasters that affect your region, and just try and figure things out from there. So for us, like, again, we live in the Highlands of Scotland. We don't have the likes of hurricanes and stuff here, but flooding is a big thing here. Being snowed in is a big thing here. Power cuts can be things here. So find out what could happen to you. And then we need to start thinking about how should you prepare for each? Do you need to have a bug out bag? Do you need to have extra supplies at home? Do you need to have a way that you can communicate or travel if you couldn't travel with your car? There's obviously a lot of different things that come into play here, but think about how you can prepare for each of these disasters that could be likely to happen to you. Next up, we want to know that does your community or your government or your country have a public warning system? What does these signals sound like? What should you do when you hear them? Have you discussed this with your kids? And then it actually got me thinking as well, because we're all likely to be at different places if something happened. I mean, the ideal situation would be you're all at home on a Saturday, you're all together, your kids aren't at school or at daycare or anywhere else, and you all react to this together. But that's an ideal situation. It's not real life. So why don't we also educate ourselves on any disaster plans that are already in place at our workplace, our children's school, and get a copy of their emergency plans so that you know what to expect if a disaster happens there and how you'd come back together if this did occur, because these places are required to have emergency procedures in place. And then from there, it might be helpful to discuss, what are we going to do individually if we are all in different places? And this is one that hits home for me, is one that I don't even like talking about, because the likelihood of Will and I being together in an emergency is quite slim. Will works away as a welder and he's offshore a lot of the time. He could be in the North Sea, he could be in the Middle East, he could be in Norway, he could be in England. And this topic just freaks me out a lot. I just always drill home the importance to him that if something seems to be happening, get in front of the masses, get home as quickly as you can, because as soon as the panic hits the world or the panic hits your immediate area, it's going to be a lot more difficult. If he's in England, for example, what is his alternate modes of transportation? If he can't get home by road, if he can't get home by aeroplane or train, is there a way that he could cycle? Yeah, it would take days and days and days, but I think it's just really important to have all of these contingency plans in place so that you're not separated from your loved ones if things really do go south. And if you are separated, how can we, as easily as possible, get back together? So we are going to want to develop an emergency communication plan as well. I mean, we're all so used to having phones on us all the time, and it's great. It's got all of our contacts on it, and we can phone our family members whenever we want, but we are so dependent on it now. And in a big disaster, phone calls often have a hard time going through because everyone in the area is trying to make a call at the same time. And the systems can only handle so much at once. I think about whenever we've been at a music festival, it is impossible to phone people because everybody there is trying to do so at the same time. If anything does happen, text messages are a lot more likely to go through. Or if we can find internet, then there's that as well. But we also need to think about other ways of doing things. If you have the number for someone who is far away, sometimes that can help go through. Or you should keep hard copies too, because phones only go so far. They only work when they're good, when they're water damaged, or if they're out of charge. We can often be left without a backup option. So if we could have a hard copy of phone numbers or real addresses or email addresses, and contacts for people in different places, then that's a great starting point. We're going to go through what types of disasters are most likely to happen and what to do in each case, and everyone should know what each person is meant to do. If you aren't together, pick two places. Let's not overcomplicate it. Pick two places to meet. Have one that's just outside of your home in case of a sudden emergency like a fire. You know, far enough away that you're not going to be burnt, literally. But you're also going to want one that's outside of your immediate area in case you can't return home or if you're asked to leave your immediate area. It's important that everybody knows the address or the phone number of where you're going to be meeting. I can also remember reading this tip years ago that really stuck with me, and it said that if you're in a place frequently, like your place of work, that you should have two or three different routes of getting there and getting back, just in case there's road closures or an emergency, that you have other ways that you can go. You're not just used to taking that one same route where you zone in and out. You know how it goes. You're traveling somewhere sometimes and it's almost like you're in this zombie mode, and you 10 minutes later you're like, oh my goodness, how did I even get here? Because you're so used to driving that road all day, every day. Have you thought about other ways to get to your place of work? Have you thought about if you had to do it on foot or if you were cycling? I personally found that really helpful for me, and I almost do it subconsciously now when I'm going places. If I had to get out of here and the main road was closed, which way would I go? That might sound kind of paranoid, but I don't do it in a fearful way. I think it's just the way that my brain works now. So you're still sitting here planning on your own before you even bring this to the rest of your family, before you even discuss this. Let's recap your thinking. What's most likely to happen? How should you prepare for each situation? Does your community have a public warning system? And then I want to think about what about animals? Do you have animals? Do you have pets? Do you have livestock? What are you going to do if you need to evacuate? If you're not sheltering in place, if you can't shelter in place, if you really need to go and evacuate, what are you going to do with your pets? I touched on this in last episode, but do you have a vehicle that's big enough? Do you have a way to transport them all safely? Do you have crates? Because animals might feel threatened by some disasters, and when they're frightened, they might try and run away. Imagine losing your dog or cat or any other pet in amongst this chaos that's unfolding. You might want to have some identification for them, a collar, a leash, proof of their vaccinations, a current photo of them just in case they do get lost. Do you have a plan of where you're going to go? Plan on where you could take your pets if you had to go to a public shelter, because a lot of the time animals aren't permitted in there. We've got to have a backup plan for them too. It's horrific. I can still remember seeing, you know, videos of wildfires. I think that was last year, and farmers just having to open their gates for their livestock to hopefully escape. And I know that's a really severe situation, and hopefully we're not going to be in that situation, but having a backup plan is a must for these little lives that are depending on you. Talking about little lives that are depending on you, if you care for anyone elderly or disabled or vulnerable, how can you help them? What are some things that you need to consider to help them? Obviously, a preparedness plan with someone like that is going to look different. Okay, so the next step of all of this is to actually meet with your family and discuss everything that you have been thinking about just now. You're wanting to review the types of disasters that are most likely to occur and explain what you think you should be doing, and have an open and honest conversation about this, because I truly believe that everybody can bring something to the table. My mind works a really different way from the likes of Will's. It works a different way from my mum's and dad's. And I think having open conversations about all of this is so helpful, because you're gaining insight that you might not see. You might have this one-track mind with tunnel vision, and just having someone else throw their own opinion in can really help create a solid plan. So you meet with your family, you're discussing why you need to prepare and what you're preparing, you're explaining the dangers of the likes of fire or earthquakes to children. Again, this can be done in such a non-fearful way. It doesn't need to be overwhelming for them. I think about my niece, Beth. She's 10 and she's in Cubs, which is like a variation of Scouts. And they learn so much, and it's amazing to see her come home just filled with this confidence of how to handle day-to-day situations. She learned about CPR and the recovery position and using defibrillators the other day. And it was just really fun to like ask her all of these questions. And she thrives when she's talking about things and teaching you. So it was nice to be like, okay, so if I fell over just now, what would you do? And she played it out. You know, she called for help. She checked to see if I was breathing. She called emergency services. She was helping put me in the recovery position. And you know, I actually learned something from her as well, because I hadn't considered this before. I said to her, if I was a man with a hairy chest, do you think those pads would stick to me? And she goes, no, but that's why most kits come with a razor, so you're meant to shave their chest quickly if they don't stick. And I was just like, wow, this is amazing for her to know at such a young age. And she was so empowered by it. She wasn't scared. She now knows what to do in an emergency situation. You can involve kids in a way that's not too much for them. We can plan to share the responsibilities. We can work together as a team. We're wanting to keep this family preparedness plan as simple as possible so that people can remember all the important details. If we are, God forbid, in a disaster that's extremely stressful, you know, a lot of people will panic and we don't want to add to the confusion. So the best emergency plans are those with few details and we can pinpoint the main things. How do you have these conversations surrounding disasters that could hurt people, that could cause damage, that could cut off our services like our water and our telephones and our electricity? How do we do that in a way that they understand that isn't too much for them? So I personally think the absolute basics of what children should be able to do is know when and how to call for help. Because at the end of the day, they could be in a situation without you that they need to do that. They need to know how to call emergency services. They could even be doing that for you at some point. I know we don't want to think about that, but really young children can be taught how to get emergency assistance. And if they don't know how to read, then make an emergency telephone number chart with pictures that may help them identify the correct number to call. Another practical tip that I will definitely be implementing when Rosemary is a bit older is teaching her to call a family contact in case she's separated from us, and helping them memorize the telephone number or write it down on a card that she can keep with her in a little bag. I can remember when we went to Disneyland Paris, I don't know how old I was, but my dad made us sit on this wall, and he did it again in a fun way. We didn't know his number or my mum's number off by heart. We had it written on our hand so that if we did get separated from them there, that I had a number to call to obviously reach them again. But I can remember him sitting with us, and we went over and over and over this mobile number. And to this day, I now know my mum and dad's mobile number off by heart from that time sitting on a wall at Disneyland. So you can teach your kids how to do this too. Make a little fun song out of it. But if they know your mobile number, that's really comforting for them and probably really comforting for you too. And lastly, I think it's really helpful for our children to know that in a disaster, there are hopefully many other people who can help them. I know it's not nice to think about strangers even coming near our children, and obviously not everybody can be trusted, but the likes of volunteers and police officers and firefighters, teachers and doctors and neighbours, that they can help following a disaster. If you collapse in the kitchen and your child's in the house on their own, run and get a neighbour. I think it's important that they know what to do if something like this happens. Okay, and step three of all of this is to actually prepare. There is loads of different ways that we can do this, but I like to sort of try and tick off different things. I'm going to give you some examples here of what you can do, but there's so many other things that you can add to your family emergency plan. So let's start by making a list of emergency phone numbers. You know, in my country, it's 999. And I know that seems so simple, but making sure that our kids know this, or having numbers printed on the wall, which has all of our family contacts or any numbers that you are going to need in an emergency, basically. Another thing that we could do is all know where we can turn the water, gas and electricity off at the mains. You know, in case there's a leak, we want to know how to turn these things off. What else could you do? You could run a fire drill, make sure that everybody knows what they're doing, but not only doing that, installing smoke alarms, making sure that they're all well charged and the batteries in them are good, making sure that we all know how to use a fire extinguisher. Do you even have a fire extinguisher in your home? That's a big one. My parents didn't for some reason, even though my mum was a firefighter. I know, it's a sin. I recently got them one though, so we're fine on that front now. What else? We could find the safe places in our house for each type of disaster. You know, basements might be really good for tornadoes, but they're probably the worst place for you to be in the event of flooding. making sure that we have taken first aid classes and CPR classes. That's a big one for a family emergency plan, so that everybody knows what they're meant to do in these situations. I mean, if kids can learn this, you can learn this too. If you've never done a first aid course or a CPR class, this is your sign to go and do one now. A lot of the time you can find these for free, and I know it's not the real deal, but you can also YouTube it. If you're listening to this podcast, if you have access to the internet, then you can just as easily type this in and just gain some experience. Something is better than nothing. Stocking our homes is also a big one, making sure that we have enough food and water for if there is a disaster and we need to stay in our homes, so that we have everything there that we need to have. So you can make like a disaster supply kit or a bug out bag. You would have a lot that you need in there for at least 3 days that's going to help you in the event of evacuation, or if you're going to stay in your house, you've got everything there that you need. But we also want to make sure that we have portable battery operated radios, extra batteries, flashlights, all of these kind of things in your house is great to have day to day, but they become even more important in the event of an emergency. Just recently, actually, one of the things that I did was anything that's really important to us, or any vital documents, or, you know, passports and birth certificates and things like that. We've now got a place to keep it that is not only waterproof, but also fireproof. You can find these boxes online, and that's just another bit of peace of mind for you. And again, I'm going back to wildfires here, but something I learned online recently that I hadn't even thought of before is, one, making sure that you have adequate insurance cover for anything that you need to be insured for. But two is creating an inventory of your home, your garage, your surrounding property, and you can have a written copy, but it's also really beneficial to do this by video. So you want to include as much as you can so that you can claim on the other side, just in case something is damaged or destroyed. If you've gone through such a big event, the last thing that you need is your insurance not covering you because you didn't have proof of owning that thing in the first place. Okay, has this episode been really scrambled? Because it feels really scrambled in my head, and I'm hoping that you're keeping up with my disorganized thoughts as we are getting ready to wrap this up now. We've covered step one, which is identifying your hazards. Step two, holding a family meeting and discussing everything. Step three, which is preparing anything and everything you need to prepare. And now we go on to step four of this whole disaster plan, which is simply practicing and maintaining your plan. You're going to want to ensure that you know it inside out, and also that your family members know it inside out too. You can do this by almost quizzing your kids periodically, or just simply adding it into conversation here and there, asking them if they remember what to do, what your meeting places are, and general safety rules. It's also probably worth going over fire drills, what you would do in that situation, what you would do in a situation where you need the CPR, just things like that, so that everybody stays up to date and everybody stays a responsible, capable member of the family who knows how to deal with these situations. And lastly, you're going to want to make sure that any food, water, medication or equipment that you have in your disaster kit is periodically rotated out and kept up to date, so it's not expiring and it's always fresh and ready to use in the event that you need to. Gee whiz, I feel like I rambled so much there, and I was going to take listener questions this week, but I think we're going to run out of time, so we will save that for next week. If you've made it to the end of this episode and you're still listening, then well done. The amount of times I had to pause this to attend to a crying baby is really quite funny. I should set up a time lapse. I think it takes me about 5 hours to record a 20 to 30 minute podcast. Ah, life with a newborn is tricky, but we're managing. We're getting there slowly but surely. Please let me know if there's any topics in particular that you really want to dive into that you would find helpful, because I love speaking about all of this. Obviously, I have a preparedness count. It's my passion. I could talk about it forever. But let me know if there's anything that you think could really help you, because that's what I'm here for. I want to help you. I want to help each and every person listening to this podcast to become more prepared, because if we prepare as individuals, we are also creating a more prepared society. And you know what they say, fail to prepare, prepare to fail. So thank you again for taking the time to join me this week and listen to me ramble all about family preparedness plans. Hopefully it's helped and you can feel confident going forward and creating one for yourself, picking out the bits that resonate with you and just leaving the bits that don't. That's the beautiful thing about preparedness. We get to choose what works for us. And if you have any feedback on this episode, if you want to reach out to me, you can do so at preppingforeverything@gmail.com, or you can often find me through Instagram messages. That's where I'm most active. And one final note to just acknowledge those of you that have left a rating or review. I think this is my fourth or maybe fifth episode now, and it's just been really, really helpful for other people finding this podcast. I appreciate it. I appreciate you taking the time to do so and being here listening every week. Thank you, thank you, thank you, and I will see you again next Wednesday.